You are now listening to the Ramble On podcast.
Dope, ready to get.
Get a fire going.
A new power is rising.
How did it come to this?
Tree?
Go hit him!
I am no tree.
Ramble On!
Welcome back, Ramblers, to Season 2, Episode 7 of the Ramble On Podcast. With me, as always, is my good friend Alex Dagelman.
Thank you.
And listen, I know we promised that we were going to do this last weekend. We're liars, okay? You should have expected that. I thought we promised we were going to do it again.
Well, if you forget about it, it's not really a promise.
Yeah, that's how promises work. Regardless, we're here now. Let's get into it. So, we're in book 4, which is still firmly in the Two Towers. But the way that Tolkien separated it out, we're actually in book 4 of the entire series right now. Still the Two Towers.
I don't get it.
I don't either. We're on chapters 2 and 3 of book 4. So, last episode, we were continuing our journey with Sam and Frodo. So we're on the Sam and Frodo storyline, and basically the last thing we saw them do, they captured Gollum, and they're now going to use him as a guide to get through the rest of Imamwheel, and then to whatever lies next.
Right.
Chapter 2, what happens to lie next, is the marshes. Chapter 2 is called The Passage of the Marshes. So we open up in chapter 2, and so far Gollum has stayed true to his word, and he's not tried to escape, right? He made a promise to, either on or by the precious, the ring, whatever the wording was. So far he's staying true to his word. He swears on the ring that he won't try to leave them. So at this point, Gollum is, moving Sam and Frodo kind of southeast toward the marshes. It kind of helps to look at a map, honestly, whenever we're talking about some of this stuff. So basically, from Imamwheel, which is the area they came out of whenever they left the Great River, headed east towards Mordor, they went through Imamwheel, which was the barren wasteland full of razor sharp rocks, as Gimli describes it. And so they talk about it in this chapter, but there is a long way around. You can take a road that goes east and then kind of cuts south, avoiding the marshes and taking you directly to Mordor. However, that way is very heavily guarded. There's no way they would have made it through there, right?
It's basically like a highway for orcs.
That's exactly what it is. There's no way they would have made it that way, and Gollum knows this. Gollum's pretty familiar with the area. So he's leading him through the marshes, which are called the Dead Marshes, and we'll get there in a second as to why they're called the Dead Marshes. He's leading them out of Imamwheel. He leads them, like I said, kind of southeast towards the marshes, which is in a direct line towards Mordor. It's kind of the closest distance between two points, but there's also this kind of marsh in the way that
right.
could be difficult. So he's leading him through here. One of the first things that comes up is Gollum sings this little song, and he refers back to the riddle that he asked Bilbo back in The Hobbit. This is referenced in like the first couple pages of this chapter. He kind of is journeying back and remembering one of the riddles that he says to Bilbo when Bilbo actually finds the ring back in The Hobbit. But we're not going to dwell too much on that. Moving on from that, Sam, who's the pragmatist, starts to wonder how Gollum is going to eat, right? So they don't have a ton of food with them, and he's wondering about kind of how Gollum is going to survive. And for that matter, how Gollum survives in general. Like, he doesn't carry anything with him.
Right.
He's just, like, been out in the wilderness for years, so obviously he eats something. and we'll see in a second that turns out to be just, like, bugs and worms and whatever happens to be in the ground. But as they're moving out of Immonweal, they kind of come to this gully, and the land starts to flatten out from kind of this more like hilly, mountainous area. And they end up moving basically straight into the marshes. It goes very quickly from the hilly, rocky lands of Immonweal into the marshlands.
I think it might be beneficial to note that Sam thinks about the fact that Gollum, it's kind of like one of Sam's first, he's first introduced to his distrust for Gollum.
Okay.
Is the fact that he thinks that he might try to eat them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that he wouldn't put it past them to try to see what hobbit meat tastes like.
Yeah, when he's considering what Gollum's going to eat.
Yeah.
He's hoping he doesn't end up snacking on them.
So there's one of our first channels of distrust, Sam's distrust towards Gollum.
Which runs very deep.
Yes.
And we'll see that in the next couple chapters. Yeah, so Sam doesn't trust Frodo, or Sam doesn't trust Gollum. At some point, this happens a couple times. Sam can never stay awake to...
No.
Every time he tries to go to keep watch and make sure Gollum doesn't do anything, he passes out. And on one occasion, he passes out just in time to see Gollum run off to go get food from somewhere. And it says Gollum comes back with, like, mud and stuff all over his hands and his face. So Sam assumes that he's been eating, like, worms and whatever kind of beetles that happen to be in the ground. So, like I said, they make their way out of Immonweal, and they come to the marches, and this stretches kind of, like I said, southeast towards Mordor. And it's easier if you look on a map, but as they're coming out of Immonweal, they can look across the marshes and see the northernmost mountains of Mordor. This is obviously kind of like a flatland that goes straight up onto Mordor. And there's another little area of land in between the marshes and Mordor that they have stuff to get through. And I think... Let me see. I wanted to read something here. Because it sounded cool. What was it? Oh, never mind. It's not that cool. But just to describe like the kind of... climate that they're going through in this marsh. It's described as dreary and wearisome. Cold, clammy winter still held sway in this forsaken country. The only green was the scum of livid weed on the dark, greasy surfaces of the sullen waters. Dead grasses and rotting weeds loomed up in the mists like ragged shadows of long-forgotten summers. So it's not a nice place. And this is marks the third day of their journey with Gollum. So... they're going through the marshes, and it's pretty slow going, right? So they end up getting as far as, like, neck deep up in, like, this marshland. There's gurgling. Every time they step in the ground, there's gurgling, and they sink down into the waste. And before too long, they start to... I think Sam's the first one that mentions it, but he starts to see these little lights in the marsh, and it looks like little candles held like just beneath the surface of the water on the marsh. Sam says something about it, and Gollum calls them candles of corpses.
Right.
He tells them not to follow them, and it makes it seem like they're, I don't know if purposefully, not necessarily purposefully put there, but they're meant to like draw travelers off of the correct path.
Right.
That's like kind of what it seems like. So for a second here, as Sam is noticing these lights in the water, he actually loses track of Frodo. It's pretty dark at this point, so he can't see very far, but he actually doesn't know where Frodo is. He ends up running back, retracing his steps, and he finds Frodo kind of staring off into the water, and it says his hands and his arms are wet and have like slime on them.
Yeah.
And so you don't get the scene that you do in the film. The scene in the film, which if you watch it as a little kid is pretty scary.
Yes.
Where Frodo
it still is.
Yeah, it's pretty scary. They see these dead faces, dead things in the water, and one of them, their eyes open up and Frodo just falls directly into the water, and there's these like he enters some like weird spirit realm almost, and there's these like spirits that reach out to grab him. And I think that scene is interesting in the film because Gollum is actually the one that pulls him out and saves him.
Right.
You don't see that here. You see that he might have fallen in. I don't know. It's kind of hard to tell. He's almost like in a dreamlike state whenever Sam gets to him.
Yeah.
But in the film, Gollum is the one that pulls him out of the water, and you can see Frodo. I feel like whenever Gollum does that, he kind of, that's the start of a more strong connection between Frodo and Gollum. Frodo at that point realizes that Gollum not only isn't going to kill him, but also saves his life, basically, right in that moment. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. That doesn't actually come up in the book, though. Am I missing anything? Did you have anything else you
want to talk about? I think we're just going to... We'll return back to a couple things when we're finished.
Okay. All right. This is... The reason that there's all these dead people in the water is that this is actually an ancient battleground. So this didn't used to be marshland. This is the site of some battles that took place, I believe, during the Last Alliance, right? In the Second Age?
is that battle.
Okay.
On the slopes of Mount Doom.
Are you sure?
I looked it up 100 times. Really? Because I didn't think that's what it was.
Okay, but that's weird because in the prologue of the first film of the Fellowship, it looks like it's right inside...
It does.
Mortal, or is it all one continuous battle that's just like spreads throughout the entire...
It was a battle that lasted months, first of all. Or it's speculated that it lasted months. Right. So the Dead Marshes, the marshes, part of it has always been there.
Okay.
The actual battle plane of Dogorlad, you can see this on your map too. It's like a little bit northeast of the actual Dead Marshes. From the research I've done, it says that the marshes have grown since then and collected the bodies of the
dead that were buried there. Yeah.
That battle, and somebody please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure this is correct. That's the battle that you're seeing in the prologue of the Fellowship.
Okay. Well, if you look at the map, it would if this is a months long battle that is waged all the way, basically beating Sauron's forces back all the way from right outside of Mordor all the way up to Mount Doom. That would make sense. And then maybe, I'm assuming the only little glimpse you get of it in the prologue of the Fellowship is the very, which, I mean, obviously it is, but it's also the very end of the battle.
Yeah, because I'm pretty sure they're inside of Mordor at that point.
They definitely are. Because it even, inside... who's narrating at that point? Isn't it Galadriel?
Galadriel, yeah.
Galadriel even says on the slopes of Mount Doom, they fought for the freedom of...
Right. Middle Earth. Yeah, the free, whatever.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe the exact scene you're seeing isn't the Battle of Dogorlad, but that...
encompasses the entire, like,
that battle series of, the Last of Alliance. Skirmishes. Yeah, that was, like, part of the, like, before they break through the Black Gates, which they don't show that.
Right, nobody which would be cool.
That would be awesome. They somehow get through the Black Gate. Into Mordor.
So regardless, there's...
On the slopes of Mount Doom. Where Isildur cuts the ring from...
Sauron's hand. Exactly. So regardless of how long this battle took place, it was very long and it ranged from a lot of different areas. But there's... So in the water they can see elves and men and orcs, which are all the primary players in this game that took place during the Last Alliance. They see these corpses. In another thing that's interesting is Gollum says that he says you cannot reach them, you cannot touch them. I guess Gollum has tried to grab them before, and Sam thinks that maybe it's because Gollum was hungry and needed something to eat, which is disgusting. But so that makes it seem like they're, like I said before, almost in this like spirit realm, almost like they're images in the water and not physically there, but in like a weird
sort of Middle Earth magical way.
Exactly. Like I said, we don't get that famous scene with Frodo falling headfirst into the water, and Gollum does not reach in and save him as he does in the film. So there'll have to be other ways that Gollum and Frodo become closer to one another. If that kind of the character dynamic between Frodo and Gollum, if it remains the same as it does in the film, then I think there's got to be a few other things that take place that kind of strengthen that bond. But I don't know. I'm just speculating at this point. Like I said, it's tough going through this marsh. They get almost up to their necks, like I said, in these like slimy cesspools. Everything smells disgusting. And at one point, and this is something that you see in the film, a wraith on wings, as Gollum calls them, mm-hmm. flies right overhead. So it's a Nazgul. They see and hear it at night, and it kind of swoops past them, actually goes right over them, and then goes back to Mordor.
Right.
And throughout these chapters, there's a few encounters they have from a distance with the Nazgul. And I was trying to go back and think of the times that you see Nazgul in the previous chapters from Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli's point of view to try to match up. But it was hard to match up when that was going on. So I couldn't quite do it. But obviously the Nazgul that Legolas, Gimli, and Aragorn see as this is happening, they correlate somehow. I just couldn't necessarily figure out which ones were which.
You probably could if you spent a day.
A little too much time. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, it passes over them and then heads straight back to Mordor. So at this point, they're not sure if they know where they are. They're not sure if it spotted them. They're hoping that their elvish cloaks, though, protected them somewhat.
Gollum also brings up the white face.
The moon? Is that what he's talking about?
He says, curse the white face.
Yeah, I thought he was talking about the moon, although
maybe he is talking about
the moon. Hold on, let me...
He brings it up later. I never even thought he might be talking about the moon.
Because he talks about the white face...
I thought maybe he was talking about the Witch King.
The Witch King? That's possible. I can't remember where exactly...
considered that he might be talking about the moon.
Because he hates the moon and the sun.
Yeah.
I think he calls the sun, like, yellow face or something.
That makes sense, too. That makes more sense.
Because when the moon is out in full, it's easier for them to be seen.
Yeah.
I can't find exactly where it is, but I think he's talking about the moon.
I think he probably is, too.
Yeah, okay.
Now that you say that. He brings it up later, and I'll see if it makes sense as well.
Okay. So they have a near brush with the Nazgul, but they keep journeying on. And at this point, it's probably already started, but this is the first time Sam brings it up. Sam starts to notice that the ring is really taking a toll on Frodo. He sees that Frodo is like really weary, like more tired than he probably should be. He says weary to the point of exhaustion, and he walks like he's carrying a load that is the weight of which is ever increasing. So it's almost like the closer Frodo gets to Mordor, the heavier this burden becomes. Yep. And you even kind of get a little glimpse of Frodo's inner thoughts, and how kind of consumed he is with the thought of the Great Eye. So I'm actually going to read off a little bit, because no one says it better than Tolkien. The Eye, that horrible growing sense of a hostile will that strove with great power to pierce all shadows of cloud and earth and flesh and see you, to pin you under its deadly gaze, naked, immovable. So yeah, this is... kind of takes up a big portion of Frodo's, his thoughts and his fears is this eye, which is the representation of Sauron, right? It's
right.
It's searching out for him, and he's afraid that it's going to kind of pin him down. But by morning, they actually realize, so they're moving through the night, through the marsh, and it seems like it's slow going, but actually by morning, the hobbits realize that they're actually pretty close to Mordor. They've made it by this time to basically the edge of the marsh. Mm-hmm. They made it through and they see the mountains, the northernmost mountains of Mordor. And, they basically for the next 2 days, they go through what's called No Man Lands, which, again, is this area right between the marshes and in Mordor. Right.
Right.
So I'm going to read another because I like, I like the way he describes like the landscape in a bunch of these places.
It made me sick.
Yeah. So I'm gonna read off how he describes this this No Man Lands. So this is from Tolkien. Here nothing lived, not even the leprous growths that feed on rottenness. The gasping pools were choked with ash and crawling muds, sickly white and gray, as if the mountains had vomited the filth of their entrails upon the lands about. High mounds of crushed and powdered rock, great cones of earth fire-blasted and poison-stained, stood like an obscene graveyard in endless rows, slowly revealing in the reluctant light. So it's not a nice place.
It's worse. It seems worse than the marshes.
Yeah, it's Sam even says he feels sick, and it's just his fro did not speak. It's this gross area.
Which he hasn't in a long time.
Yeah.
Think about it, like, this whole chapter, Frodo does not
He does not talk very much. No. And it's also described, so it says, they'd come to the desolation that lay before Mordor, the lasting monument to the dark labor of its slaves that should endure when all their purposes were made void. So this is, I think this is, like, remnants from mining and other various, like, activities around this area that the servants of Mordor were performing. I don't really know, but basically it's just this wasteland that they have to get through in order to get to the mountains. Did you have anything else you wanted to add about that before I moved on? Or no. I mean, it really, there's not a whole lot. It's not that well described except for what I just told you,
right?
And they basically just take like two more days to get through this this wasteland. So basically the only other thing that's mentioned in their journey through this area is one more interaction between Sam and Gollum. And really it's mostly just Gollum that Sam overhears. And this is pretty definitely the scene that they pull from for the scene in the film where Gollum is going back and forth with himself.
Right.
This one specifically, I think. Basically Sam, they're taking a nap again. Sam tries to stay awake to guard Gollum, but again, he falls asleep as always. And when he wakes up, he sees Gollum. He's pretty close to Frodo, and he can hear Gollum having this internal debate. He's talking to himself, but it's a debate between his good and bad sides, right? So like the Smeagol side and the Gollum side. And in the films, they do the interesting, the little trick with his pupils. So whenever he's like in his good self, like Smeagol, his pupils are a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. And then whenever he's in his like evil state, his pupils get smaller. So they don't really do that in the book. Obviously you can't do that. So one of the ways that they can show the difference between the two is whenever Smeagol is saying I, if he's referring to himself as I, then that's usually like when he's kind of in the better side of things. And when he says we, whenever he gets the plural, that's like
Gollum.
More Gollum. Yeah. Anyway, so Sam wakes up and he hears Gollum and Smeagol having this debate between one another. And essentially he wants to take the ring. Gollum wants to take the ring. Smeagol still kind of has this, some kind of affection to Frodo. And he, you know, Smeagol says that he promised not to take it. But Gollum is obviously the evil side, says he should take it. Eventually... either Gollum or Smeagol, I think it's like the Gollum side, starts to describe a she, this mysterious she character, right? So he says, she might help, she might, yes. And then Smeagol says, no, no, not that way. Basically at that point, Sam pretends to like wake up. It seems like Sam wants to be able to keep an eye on Gollum without Gollum knowing that he's actually on to him.
Yeah, he doesn't want to show his cards yet.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we're introduced to this weird, this kind of mysterious she character, and at this point Sam has no idea what he's talking about, but he obviously knows that Gollum is up to something. That's basically the end of anything important that happens in the No Man Lands. Except for, I will say that, like, twice again that night, Nazgul fly over them, headed towards the west. Sam and Frodo and Gollum they're just traveling closer to Mordor, and getting through this, first through the marsh and then through this no man's land between them and the mountains. And that's basically the end of the chapter.
Yep.
Is there anything else you wanted to talk about before we moved on to the next chapter?
A few things.
Okay.
The first would be like the introduction of a theme that's about to take root, which is this discussion Sam and Frodo have about what they're going to do about food, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And that, which leads to the start of a conversation about the fact that once they get to Mount Doom and destroy the ring, what's going to happen after that?
Yeah. I forgot to talk about that. Because Sam thinks they have, like, 3 weeks of food left. He's, like, counted it out, and he assumes that they have about 3 weeks left.
Right. And Frodo is kind of doing the math and figuring out they were seriously delayed in the hills of the Emmon Wheel.
Mm-hmm.
But he's like, it doesn't really matter because I don't think we need to give thought about what comes after. After we do the job, as he says.
And I feel like they've brought that up a couple times previous to this, where they've almost kind of come to terms with the fact that this task might be their final task. Like, this honestly might kill them. But I guess it's starting to get more real now. When they're having to think logistics with food and trying to get out of there and everything.
Yeah. And Frodo says straight up, I'm just going to read this. If we can nurse our limbs to bring us to Mount Doom, that is all we can do. More than I can, I begin to feel.
Yeah.
there was another thing I wanted to talk... So, I'm glad we just watched the scene of them going through the marshes.
Yeah. Because
that's the scene in the film where Frodo tells Gollum that that Gandalf told him that he was one of the river folk once, and tells him his name is Smeagol, and it's like a sudden realization to Gollum in the film. Whereas in the books, I don't think he's ever lost touch with the fact that he used to be this Smeagol person. He seems to remember everything from before that.
Yeah.
Right? In the next chapter, he even brings up the stories that he used to hear back when he was a young Smeagol.
Yeah, you're right. It definitely seems like some part of Gollum was in the film. It seems like some part of Gollum, his past, was lost, and then when Frodo brings it up, it's kind of like this realization.
Yeah,
which I think also leads more towards that bond between Frodo and Gollum,
and to the fact that like Frodo is seeing that even though he's this far gone, like there's a chance he can come back to what he used to be.
Yeah, and exactly. It shows Frodo. And I think it also shows Frodo what he could become, right? Like, Gollum used to be pretty close to a hobbit, and this is what he is now. This creature that resembles nothing like a hobbit, completely twisted and warped by the ring. And that's, I feel like that weighs even more on Frodo's mind because he sees, like, how much destruction this ring can actually do.
I wonder if that's going to come up in the book at all. The fact that Frodo's, like, trying to bring him back, basically.
Yeah, because
so far it doesn't seem like that. It just seems like Frodo is basically using him as a guide. Yeah, to get work.
Yeah, because he says, I think he says like word for word, I have to believe I can bring him back.
Yeah,
in the film he says that to Sam.
Yeah,
I like that dynamic that they have in the film. Yeah. I'm hoping that they bring it up.
I hope so too. I'd be very disappointed
in the book. Interesting. Well, okay, so was there anything else in the Passage of the Marshes you wanted to bring up?
I don't think so.
Okay. Basically, they get through the marshes.
Yeah.
Right?
It sucked.
That's basically what happens. Okay. Chapter 3 of Book 4 of The Two Towers. So the next chapter is called... Can you grab me one? Thank you. So this chapter is called The Black Gate is Closed. So at this point, they've made it through no man's land, right? They've made it through this area, and they're basically on the slopes of these mountains of Mordor at this point, right?
Or at least in like...
They're some, close to it.
Yeah.
They basically make it to the base of the mountains... kind of in the northwest corner of Mordor, which is where the Black Gate is,
which
right?
I was misled.
In what way?
In your thinking. I didn't realize it was like the Black Gate's like in the very corner.
Exactly.
West corner.
Yeah.
I thought it was like in between the corner and
like more west. Basically. Okay.
I thought it was on the western face of the
Mordor,
which is not...
That's not accurate. Yeah. Well, if you would have played Lord of the Rings Risk, You would know. I know a lot of my geography of Lord of the Rings from playing Lord of the Rings Risk as a kid. Regardless, they've made it to the Black Gate, also called Morannon. See, right there.
It's right there.
Yep. Okay, so yeah, they're at the Black Gate at this point. They've made it there. And this is the only major entrance into Mordor, right? So I'm gonna do a little.
Go for it.
I'm gonna talk about Mordor for a second.
Dive right in.
Mordor is it's basically a little volcanic subcontinent, right?
Yeah.
So like it's protected on three sides by mountain ranges. So there's this mountain range up north that goes kind of horizontally from east to west.
The Aerolith Weave.
Yes, and then there's the mountains along the western side of Mordor that go north to south.
Right, I don't remember what those are called.
Basically, in like the common tongue, there's the Mountains of Ash,
right,
which are the northern mountains, and then the western mountains are the mountains of the Dark Mountains. What is it?
Is it Shadow Mountains?
Mountains of Shadow. Yeah, that's it. And there's actually more mountains on the southern end of Mordor as well, which is kind of a part of that same mountain range that comes across.
It would
across.
Be a sweet place to set up shop if
yeah,
it wasn't
it's
such
perfect.
A desolate, poisonous
exactly.
Wasteland.
So if you're thinking tectonic activity, this is a little subcontinent that's like smashed into another tectonic plate,
right.
And there's mountains that came up all around it. That's what it seems like to me.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
There's mountains everywhere.
Exactly. So this area, it's pretty desolate. It's very volcanic. Sauron actually initially settled here in the Second Age during his first Reign of Darkness. So the last alliance that we were talking about in the last chapter, that alliance of men and elves were brought together to defeat Sauron the first time. That's in the Second Age. And so that's where Sauron was initially... hold up was in Mordor.
Right.
Although I will say he was not the first to settle in this area. I'm not going to say who was the first, but she has been there for a long time. We'll get to that later. So like I said, he was forced out the first time, forced out of Mordor following the last alliance and his defeat, Isildur cutting the ring off his finger. He was forced out of Mordor at that point. All of his armies were forced out, and for a long time, Gondor guarded this area, right? They built towers all around the area to guard, to make sure that Sauron never came back and got a foothold in this area again, right? However, unfortunately, there was a great plague that swept through the Kingdom of Men in the early Third Age.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was so many losses, so much of their army was killed based on this plague, that they had to basically leave all of the surrounding lands, they had to abandon all the surrounding lands. So all the guards of men that were guarding Mordor to ensure that Sauron never came back in, they all left. And for a while it was just empty, right? It was a desolate area. Eventually, obviously we see now, Sauron came back in and rebuilt his forces here because they were not being guarded. So that's a little quick rundown of the history of Mordor. Some of the prominent features of the area. Obviously, there's Mount Doom, which is an active volcano. I think is it the only active volcano? There's probably more volcanoes around the area.
I think
it's definitely the biggest.
Yeah.
And then right near Mount Doom is Barad-dûr, which is... the stronghold of Sauron, which is where you see the eye on top of it.
Just east of Mount Doom.
Yeah, it's right there. Also, we have the Black Gate, which is what we said was in the northwest corner of of Mordor there. And then also on the western edge of the mountains there, there's Minas Morgul, which used to be Minas Ithil. Which is one of those strongholds that was built by men, that was abandoned, and now is being used by Mordor. And that's actually the stronghold of the Witch King of Angmar.
Right.
The highest ranking of the Nazgul. He actually stays there. So yeah, it's not a nice area. And there's actually some thought that Mordor, in the area around Mordor, is the remnant of this really big inland sea called the Sea of Helkar that was there during the First Age. So if you journey back to like all the things like pre-Sauron, back to when Morgoth was the main bad guy, there's this big inland sea called Helkar that was in that general area. And so people think that area used to be under an inland sea that's now mostly evaporated. However, there is still a small sea in the area of Mordor called the Sea of Nurin.
Nurnin.
So there's a small inland sea in Mordor. And I will say there actually is some areas that are pretty fertile in Mordor because of the volcanic activity. There's a lot of...
Yeah, it's like Hawaii, basically.
Right? Yeah, exactly. So there's massive fields where he has his servants working to create crops for all of his massive armies. So it's not all just completely desolate, but it's not a nice area. That is what Frodo and Sam are trying to get into. Yep. That's a little rundown of Mordor. Now I'm completely lost into what my train of thought is completely
all over the place. Are you done with your geography?
Yeah, that's my geography of Mordor.
You want to talk about Cirith Ungol or...
We're going to talk about it in a second.
You want to talk about
We'll talk about it in a second. Yeah, okay. When we get to that.
All right. Fair enough.
Okay. So continue. Like I said, this chapter is called The Black Gate is Closed, after that little rendition of the geography of Mordor. So the hobbits are looking up at this at the Black Gate, right? And it's this huge structure. In the film, they do an awesome job of showing what it looks like. I mean, it takes like two or three trolls to even push the gate open, right? It's this huge thing, and they basically think there's no way they're gonna get into this, right? Like they know they have to try, but they're just like kind of in this like mode of desperation. Like they have no idea how they're going to get through this. Gollum kind of is pleading with Frodo. He doesn't want to lose the ring, right? Gollum knows if Frodo goes in there, he's going to take the ring straight to Sauron. He'll get caught.
And so, up until this point, he didn't know that's what Frodo... He didn't know Frodo wanted to actually go into Mordor.
Yeah. Frodo doesn't tell him what his plans are. He just he told Gollum to get them...
To the Black Gate.
To the Black Gate, right. Which... If Gollum was thinking ahead, he would probably assume that he would.
Probably, but I don't blame him for his
short-sightedness.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Gollum's pleading with Frodo to try to get him to not go into the gate. He knows if he tries to go that way, he's going to be found, and the ring is going to be taken straight to Sauron. So he tells him that he knows of another way, a dark and secret way into Mordor. And Sam still doesn't trust Gollum, obviously, and he's very distrustful of this plan. And basically, I mean, the same way he does in the film, he asks him like, "Why are you just now telling us this?" And Gollum responds the same way he does in the film by saying, "You asked me to get you to the Black Gate. That's what I did."
Right.
But now that he knows their plan to try to get into Mordor, he has this alternate route that he tells them about, right? And this is actually the route that he tells them that he used to escape from Mordor the first time.
Right.
Frodo
questions whether he was allowed to escape or that escape was arranged.
Yeah, it's still a little hazy, honestly. Yeah. It doesn't ever say for sure, at least not yet, whether Gollum did escape or if he was sent out to do some alternate, by some alternate force. So Gollum is describing this secret way into Mordor, which basically involves you take a road around the west side of Mordor, right? So along the mountains, and then you get to, basically right where, Minas Morgul is, right? There's a mountain pass that leads up to Minas Morgul, and, which is through the Mountains of Shadow, right? So there's a pass that leads up to Minas Morgul. Which Gollum calls the Tower of the Moon.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why he calls it that, but I guess it doesn't really matter.
Well, he also says there's like, there in the tower, there was a stone. Do you remember him saying that?
I don't remember him saying that. Maybe I just missed it, but...
He says something about, like, he was referring to the stories you used to hear about it. Back when he was a young Smeagol.
Okay.
About the tower, and in the tower there was a stone that was like the moon or something like that.
Oh, is he talking about another Palantir?
Perhaps.
Because there is a Palantir there, right?
Maybe. I want to look up why. You keep talking.
I'm going to keep talking.
Call it the Moon Tower.
Okay. So yeah, so there's this secret pass that leads up to Minas Morgul, and it's still a dangerous path, but it's safer than going through the Black Gate, Gollum thinks. And then there's this a narrow stair that you take up into the mountains to a tunnel. That's kind of how he describes it. And it turns out this pass would take them through Cirith Ungol, which means the spider's cleft, which is another little hint as to who she is that Gollum is referring to. We can go ahead and just say it. He's talking about Shelob, right? Yeah. Or Shelob, however you prefer to pronounce. How do you pronounce it?
Shelob.
Shelob?
That's how that orc pronounces it.
Okay, that's true. I've heard Shelob or Shelob before. Anyway.
I'm going to go with how the orc says it.
Yeah. So yeah, that she was actually the first inhabitant of Mordor. She settled in that area before Sauron even made it there. So she, the spider, Shelob, has been there for quite a long time. And that is the path that they have to take. And if we think back to Gollum's plan from earlier, basically his plan is to lead them through this tunnel and have Shelob take him out.
Right.
Right, and he can take the reign after that.
Right. Do you want to hear about Minas Ithil
real quick? I'd love to.
So when they built Minas Ithil, the city's white marble walls, buildings, and tower were designed to catch and reflect the moonlight and shone with a soft silver luminescence.
So that's the whole reason?
There you go.
Okay.
And they also kept a Palantir there.
Okay. Well, then that makes sense. Yeah, Tower of the Moon. So Frodo now has a decision to make, right? And he doesn't have Gandalf there to help him. He doesn't have Aragorn there to help him. He's kind of at a loss, so he has to sit down to kind of think about what he needs to do. During this time that he's sitting down thinking, I don't know exactly how long it is, but four different Nazgul fly off from Mordor headed west, right? And so these are all pretty, they never swoop down really close to them. They're off doing other business, but obviously there's a lot of activity going on in Mordor, right? These Nazgul are going all over the place. Based on the events that we've already read about, they're obviously going to Isengard or somewhere near there, is what I would assume, right? I forgot to mention, but during this time that they're near the gate, they also see two different armies of men come into Mordor, right? So the first army they see come through is from the lands to the east, kind of off the map. The lands to the east of Mordor.
Right.
They're described as evil men. I'm sure they're not all evil. They're just doing what they're ordered to do. But that's what they're described as, right? They're not men of Gondor. They're men coming from the east. There's basically a whole great company of them heading into Mordor to the call of Sauron, right, to fight. Another army comes from the south. Mm-hmm. Same thing. They're described as evil-looking men, and they're coming to help build the ranks of Mordor. And then, so Sam, when he hears that this army from the south is coming, he asks Gollum if there were any Olyphants. And Sam, in true strange Sam fashion, stands up and... And does this little, like...
Stands up in front of the class.
Exactly. It says he puts his hands behind his back and recites this little poem. I'm not going to read off the poem, but basically it's like a children's little, like, nursery rhyme. Yeah, about Olyphants, which are, we would call elephants, but they're massive. Giant. They're huge, right? You see them in the films. They're these huge creatures. And so Sam recites this little poem about, it starts off, gray as a mouse, big as a house, nose like a snake, I make the earth shake. So it's just describing Olyphants, and his little, Sam's poem just cheers Frodo right up.
Yeah.
Frodo basically laughs out loud at Sam seeing this ridiculous poem in the middle of, the lands that they're in right now. And, for whatever reason, that kind of breaks him out of his indecisiveness, and he says, you know what, Gollum, you've gotten us this far, we've trusted you, you haven't let us down, so I'm going to trust you this another time, take us through this secret route, right?
That's it.
Unfortunately, there weren't any Olyphants. I will go back and add that. There were no Olyphants, although later in the film they do see them.
I bet they'll run into them.
They might, so Sam might get a chance to see an Olyphant after all. So yeah, Frodo decides that they're going to take this western road towards the path towards Cirith Ungol.
Right.
I don't think I missed anything.
You did.
Okay.
What did you talk about Frodo and Gollum's little? This could have been when I was researching.
Oh, no, I passed right over that.
So, but he has that little
confrontation almost. Yeah.
Where he's basically this is after Sam kind of thinks of Frodo as too soft-hearted.
Yeah.
To kind of deal with the fact that this Gollum creature might betray them, but then Frodo says, "Listen, you swore on this ring, and I know it still has power over you. If you betray me, I will." He basically says, "I'll put it on and command you to kill yourself."
Basically. Yeah, Frodo knows that
it freaks Gollum out.
Yeah,
and this is like after he had the conversation after Sméagol has the conversation with Gollum.
Yeah,
and at that point, he's decided, okay, we'll betray Frodo and get the ring. Now he's kind of.
Possibly wavering on that.
Yeah, second guessing him.
Yeah, basically, Frodo knows that if he were to put the ring on, that he would be. Gollum would have to obey him because he's the true master of the ring at that point, and he would be unwilling to. He'd be unable to disobey anyone who commands him to do something. Right. Yeah, and he says, I could command you to jump off a cliff or whatever.
Or toss yourself in the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting as well. I just forgot to bring it up.
Then another thing is. Before the second army shows up, Frodo is weighing his options on the path he's going to take. And basically, at the end of... he starts thinking about Gandalf, and he's trying to think of all the good Gandalf wisdom that he knows, and starts thinking, I don't even think Gandalf's ever... He might not have ever been into Mordor. Aragorn might not have ever been into Mordor. How am I going to get in here, first of all, and how am I going to get out? And then you get, like, the second step into the fact that Frodo realizes that, either way, death and terror are the only options. No matter what he chooses, that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
The end of this paragraph that I starred says, when he's debating his options, he says... this was an evil choice. Which way should he choose? And if both led to terror and death, what good lame choice?
Yeah.
Another step into the fact that he realizes he's probably not going to make it out of this alive.
Yeah.
Heavy stuff.
But Sam's always there to cheer him up with a little poem, right?
Yep. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
Frodo wouldn't have gotten very far without Sam.
That's basically all I had. These were a little bit shorter chapters, not as much major stuff goes on.
Some introduction into some character development.
Yeah, definitely.
The ring is definitely starting to take its toll on Frodo, and he's definitely, it's getting heavier.
Yeah.
Not just the ring, but the tone,
yeah,
for sure.
And I, like we said before, but I'm hoping that Tolkien really fleshes out that kind of dynamic between Frodo and Gollum a little more. And there's still quite a few chapters left of this storyline, so I'm assuming that he does more with it as they move on. Which in the film, you kind of see again, Frodo is moving closer to Gollum and at the same time moving further away from Sam.
Yeah.
And so that's a really interesting and I think important, like, dynamic in the films that I'm pretty sure will play out in the books, but I hope they do. So we'll see what happens. That should happen in the next few chapters.
He hasn't really started to turn on Sam yet.
No, not yet. But if the way things work out in the film is the way that they happen in the book, then at some point that's going to have to happen.
Yeah. I'm sure it feels like it's coming.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like how. I guess you can't really do a better job in the films at depicting Frodo's internal struggle with the fact that they're not going to make it out.
Yeah.
Just a couple conversations he has with Sam, and then they kind of use Galadriel's telepathic conversation with Elrond about Frodo realizing the question will claim his life. That's as good as you could probably illustrate.
Yeah,
Frodo's
you can't get the internal like dialogue and turmoil.
But that's
one thing
that I think that
does a better job of. Yeah. Besides, like panning to Frodo's face and him just like grimacing.
Yeah.
Which
they
do a couple times.
You get a good depiction of his external struggle.
Yeah.
But as far as what's going on inside his head, I'm glad that we get that view. And inside, and what's going on inside of Sam's head.
Yeah.
Which in the film, Sam's pretty vocal about everything.
Yeah, there's not much going on in his head. Yeah. It's all outside of his head. he's very vocal about his distrust of Gollum.
Yeah.
Stinker and Slinker, as he calls them. I can't remember which is Stinker Smeagol and Slinker is Gollum.
I don't remember.
I don't know. They're both negative, obviously, but I can't remember which one he actually hates more. Oh, and this is something just now that we're talking about this, but Sam seems to think that the two sides of Gollum's psyche have come to kind of an agreement for the time being, just because both of them desperately want to save the ring, right?
Right.
So as Gollum is trying to lead them on this third path, or this alternate path to get into Mordor, Sam assumes that both sides, Gollum and Smeagol, at this point have come to a truce to keep Frodo safe for the time being, but he does not trust that it's going to last that long.
Right. And I guess that's how Tolkien's depicting what's going on inside of Gollum's head is kind of the conversations he has with himself. But one thing that he does in chapter 2 is speculates on what Frodo and Sam might be thinking about Gollum and his decision making, and I wrote it down here somewhere.
Wait, whose decision making?
Gollum's decision making, like in his purpose.
Okay.
And it's something about him being torn between his love for the ring, his feeling the eye in Sauron's presence,
yeah.
and then the fact that he promised on the ring. So he's like torn all
in these different directions, yeah.
And it also, now that brings up something else, it compares, it actually makes one of our first comparisons to Gollum and Frodo about the fact that they both can probably feel, when it's talking about the veil between Frodo and the eye becoming thinner and thinner, and you can almost feel it, like someone can feel the sun if they had their eyes closed.
Yeah.
And the fact that Gollum is probably feeling the same thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, definitely.
I can't remember exactly where that was. I wish I could find it. Oh, here's this Slinker and Stinker. Smeagol is Slinker.
Okay.
And Gollum is Stinker.
Okay.
You're welcome, everyone.
Everyone was wondering. Sam, thank you for that, Sam. Samwise. Oh, actually, so one more thing. Now that I was looking back at the little conversation that Stinker and Slinker are having between one another, as Sam kind of wakes up and is overhearing this conversation. So the Gollum side of him is tempting the good side, the Smeagol side, with power, which is one of the themes that comes up is like the idea of like trying to get power for oneself. So yeah, Gollum is talking, and he says basically like maybe we'll grab the ring, we'll become strong, maybe even stronger than the wraiths. He calls himself Lord Smeagol, Gollum the Great. Eat fish every day, 3 times a day, fresh from the sea, most precious Gollum. So he's in this kind of internal debate with that Smeagol's having, the evil side of himself is saying, like, basically saying you can have the equivalent of money and power, which to Gollum is eating fish 3 times a day straight from the sea. But yeah, he's even tempting himself with these, like, kind of ideas of gaining power.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting.
It's the ring, man.
Mm-hmm.
So I actually found the part about the comparison between Gollum and Frodo, and it also has the part about the Gollum being torn in all these different directions. So it talks about Frodo and the veil between he and the eye becoming more thin. Gollum probably felt something of the same sort, But what went on in his wretched heart between the pressure of the eye and the lust of the ring that was so near, and his groveling promise made half in the fear of cold iron, the hobbits did not guess.
Mm, yeah. Tormented soul, that one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, I think that's enough rambling post-episode. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about? Chapters for next week. I almost forgot.
I was just going to look at that. But.
Okay, so the next chapter is of herbs and stewed rabbit. And then the chapter following is the window on the west.
Window on the west.
Which are two of the more mysteriously named chapters.
What's the window on the west?
I don't know.
Speculation?
I mean, it could just be referring to the pass that they're taking in the west of Mordor to get in. I don't know. What do you think?
I have no idea.
I guess we'll see. That has to be more... this is definitely still going to be Frodo and Sam storyline, though, I assume.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I don't think it's going to jump back to...
I think we've got a while before we get back to...
I think we won't jump back to the other side of the narrative until the Return of the King. Right? I think that's when we'd go back to the other group.
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure. Based on the chapter titles, it looks like all of these are still Sam Frodo storyline until we get to the Return of the King.
I don't think so. Is book 5 the start of Return of the King?
Yes.
Because it doesn't say that in my book.
Well, it doesn't say book 5, it just says The Return of the King.
Mine says book 5.
Being the third part of The Lord of the Rings.
Oh,
mine says book 5 too. Never mind, I lied. But it's just on a separate page.
Where does...
See, chapter 1, Minas Tirith, book
5. Oh, mine does say Return of the King. I skipped.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not gonna... We're this is all gonna be...
Frodo,
it's gonna be
Sam
and Frodo for here on out, folks. Sorry about it. Until we get to Return of the King.
Which I'm excited about.
Yeah, I'm really excited about that. New characters.
I don't want to completely jump over Sam and Frodo's storyline, because obviously it's very important, but there's just more going on in the alternate storyline that is interesting.
There's more going on explicitly.
Yeah.
In the other ones.
Easy.
That's what I get.
Yeah, so we'll get through this Sam and Frodo stuff and make sure that we take every piece of it that we need to really dig into the... Because it's like you said, it's definitely more internal.
Yeah.
Conflict that's happening in a lot of these chapters.
Some people are into that.
Some weirdos.
Anything else, Jimbo?
I think that's it.
Okay.
That's all I got.
Enjoy the rest of March Madness.
We promise we'll record next weekend.
Yeah, we can. I promise.
Right?
I promise.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Bye, guys. Don't let it get a ramble on!